You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
This is the William Hill Golf Podcast. Go to news.williamhill.com for all the podcasts or search William Hill Radio on iTunes.
Hello everyone, a very warm welcome along to the William Hill Golf Podcast. As ever, Dave Kellner and Dave Tindall with you, ready to break down the AT&T Pebble Beach Tournament. And we are top price guaranteed here at William Hill on the top 10 in the market, plus we are paying 8 places. A warm welcome to you, listeners, and to Dave Tindall, who joins me on the line this week to have a look at the sole tournament, the Pebble Beach Pro-Am, without any amateurs this week. Dave Tindall, first of all, good morning to you.
Yes, good morning, Dave. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm still looking forward to the week, despite the lack of real strength in depth of the tournament in terms of a player perspective. And I suppose from a golf betting fraternity standpoint, the absence of the amateurs isn't going to make a jot of difference. In all honesty, it might improve the actual quality of the broadcast this week.
Yeah, I think that's quite a common thread, isn't it? That this can be a bit of a painful watch. I always enjoy watching it, to be fair. I know you have to put up with the kind of inane banter, but that is kind of overridden by those shots of the ocean, just that wail and the sea crashing onto the rocks and that downhill seventh hole. Yeah, always a week I like this one. And a bit different this year because, as you say, lack of amateurs and also a change in the course rotation with just two courses being used this week.
Yeah, we'll talk about that very shortly, Mr. Tindall. Let's speak about last week first of all, though. I thought it was a sensational week of golf. We'll start with Dustin Johnson. He won in Saudi Arabia again. He's only been beaten by one person in 3 years at that golf course. Very impressive display from tee to green. And if he hadn't been confounded on the greens, the winning margin would have been of greater significance. It was such a dominant display, and he is now the bona fide number one in the world, and that gap only looks like increasing at the moment.
Yeah, as you say, had he worked out the greens, then he could have shot 25 under and or better. But what is it, 5 in 12? How many? What's the latest stats on him?
He's won five of his last 13 events, including obviously the Masters as well.
Yeah, and there's a few second places in there as well. So, I mean, you start to look at it, you can remember Tiger having maybe those numbers. Tiger's had some ridiculous numbers, sometimes better than that. But, you know, when Tiger was winning that amount, you weren't getting 5-1 on him, on Tiger. So DJ, I think we said this about DeChambeau last week. Well, he's the same price as he is for the Masters. Well, probably DJ was as well, wasn't he, last week at 5-1? And in hindsight, 5-1 beating a very modest field looks like I missed out there. Because he's so good, isn't he? He just is so good. I mean, he's won that with kind of one arm behind his back with the putter.
Yeah, it was a superb display. He was due to be around about 7-2, 4-1 this week, Dave. Yeah. Are you glad he's not in the field, or do you wish he had been in the field to build the market?
I wish he had been in the field, yeah, for that exact reason, to build the market. I saw a couple of people quote his finishes after he'd played in Saudi or in the Middle East, going straight back to America, and they were quite poor. So I think DJ would have made the market, and I wouldn't have feared him as much as I normally would have done. So, yeah, frustrating to... Well, I woke up this morning to find out. I went to Odds Checker and saw the lack of entries on Dustin Johnson. I thought, oh no, he's pulled out, and then everyone else has crashed in, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely. The market's changed significantly on the back of that news, and we'll speak about that market in a moment's time. But we've got to mention the Phoenix Open. It was just excellent, wasn't it? Jordan Spieth's brilliant 61 on Saturday. It was like a throwback, wasn't it? I think we all get nostalgic at times, and it was terrific to see. His iron play was dialed in. It wasn't a great surprise to see him fade a bit on Sunday. He displayed that almost characteristic swashbuckling play on Thursday and Friday to allow him to vault into contention on Saturday and then capitulated slightly on Sunday. The range of emotions you go through watching Jordan Spieth play golf. I think only him and Tiger Woods really get me feeling like that, Dave.
Yeah, it was great to see him come up with that low one. And as you said, the way he struck it, he ranked first for approach, gained 7.8 strokes. Good around the greens, good on the greens as well. Obviously, his driving was a bit worrying. He lost, you know, he's finished tie up and he's lost 3.7 strokes to the field, ranked 64th. So that is still a concern. But just to get a fourth place under his belt and to feel the heat of contention a little bit or be up there, it's got to be good going forward.
Yeah, you'd imagine so, wouldn't you? And I don't know if it keeps being rumours that he's working with Butch Armin. I've not seen anything categorically confirmed on that score. Have you seen anything about that? But I know a lot of tweets on the Saturday were just saying that Butch Armin was a miracle worker, basically.
I think all I heard was that Butch Armin has got some sort of advisory role as a sort of another pair of eyes. So I don't know how official it is.
Yeah. Whatever's happening with Jordan Spieth, it's working and long may it continue. But that wasn't even the story on Sunday, was it? It was Brooks Koepka coming through and winning the tournament, the Phoenix Open. Three missed cuts on the back of a tied seventh finish of the Masters. Didn't necessarily suggest it was coming, but loads of people were on him last week on Twitter. You see these tweets pop up, don't you, on the Sunday. And obviously you can go back and reference the picks if you've not seen them on Tuesday or Wednesday. It was a tournament that he'd won before, a grandstand finish with the chipping eagle on 17 to seal the deal in front of the crowds as well. It had everything, that finish from Brooks Koepka.
Yeah, I mean, it does show that even though his form coming in can be, well, fairly terrible, but he's got that thing, hasn't he, that Tiger's got. Once he gets that smell of victory, there's few better in the world of golf, probably down the years, in you know, go back 20, 30 years, that can get it done. And you think, well, he's the one who's going to come through here. And we've seen it so many times in majors where he's just looked absolutely rock solid and pulled something out. And here he was again doing it in this tournament. I think it probably helped that he'd won it before as well. And yeah, I mean, what was he, 40s?
Yeah, I mean, in hindsight, regrettably, yes, he wasn't a pick on the podcast last week, but it was just such a wonderful event. And the final three ball gave him that opportunity, didn't they, with their poor play on Sunday. I expected Xander Schauffele, Scottie Scheffler, and less so Jordan Spieth, it has to be said, to put a really solid round together and almost force the others to go into a realm that wasn't possible on Sunday on that golf course, but that never materialised.
No, it's a shame. So it could have been, well, you would have thought it would have been a playoff at least, and it could have been a multiple playoff. But yeah, looking back, I mean, those two weekend events have been won by two very recent world number ones, our world number one right now and a recent one. And the double would have been over 200-1, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
On courses where they've both won before. I'm just making myself slightly cry now thinking about it. So let's move on.
Yeah, let's talk about Pebble Beach then this week. And here at William Hill, top prize guaranteed on the top 10, plus we are paying eight places, so that's a nice concession. Patrick Cantlay is the favourite now, given the withdrawal of Dustin Johnson. 15-2 Cantlay. Daniel Berger, 14-1. Paul Casey, 16-1. Jason Day is 20s, Will Zalatoris 20-1, Jordan Spieth is 22s, Francesco Molinari is 25-1, Siwoo Kim is 30s, Cameron Davis 33s, Max Homer and Kevin Streelman and Sam Burns all 35-1, and it's 40-1 and bigger the remainder. It's a long-standing event on the PGA Tour, but because of the place in the schedule, the rich getting richer in Saudi last week, and we've got next week's World Golf Championship. This field is pretty poor, it has to be said. We've had some major withdrawals, including world number one Dustin Johnson. And there's also a change due to COVID. There's no amateurs in the field this week. And instead of a three-course rotation, that's down to just two courses being utilised, with Pebble Beach Golf Links hosting and one round being played at Spyglass Hill. And Monterey has been taken out of the rotation. That might mean scoring is a little more difficult than in previous years, because Monterey is historically the easiest of those three golf courses. We know everything about the iconic Pebble Beach Golf Links. Dave, is it a... Have you been to Pebble Beach before?
Yeah, I was lucky to be there when Tiger won by 15 in 2000.
Oh, wow.
Yes, that was back in my sporting life days. They sent me over, so that was a bit of a thrill to be there. But, yeah, just that moment where you stood on the 18th, by the 18th, behind the back of the 18th green, that's kind of like bucket list sort of moment. So, yeah, very lucky to be able to experience that.
What was that atmosphere like then, Dave, when Tiger won by 15?
Oh, yeah, fantastic. It was just, yeah, people I think got a sense they were watching something extraordinary because, what did he finish, 12 under and the next best was 3 over?
Yeah.
There was just this, wow, what you see in the greatest player playing his greatest golf. So, yeah, it was a fantastic atmosphere.
The main defence as far as Pebble Beach is concerned is the wind, given it is on the peninsula, and those tiny greens as well. And the fact that the Poana, some surface or the surfaces may suit some and can drive others absolutely crazy, can't they? If you get warm, calm conditions, it allows these players to go very low. But we don't know about the setup this week either, Dave, do we, to a certain extent, because there aren't amateurs in the field. So usually... The hole locations are easy to cater for the amateurs. That might not be the case this week.
Yeah, I saw in Rob Bolton's PGA Tour preview that he said, without the amateurs, it gives a chance for Pebble Beach to bare its teeth a little bit more. So maybe you'll get something between what it is normally and what it is in the US Open, probably nearer towards what it is normally, but there'll be an element where it'll be a bit tougher, I think.
Yeah, and Spyglass Hill, historically, a little bit tougher than Pebble Beach as well. It's a par 72, again, measures around about 7,000 yards, but parts of that course are tree-lined, whereas that's not really an issue at Pebble Beach, and the water comes into play on a few holes at Spyglass. Obviously, the ocean comes into play on a few holes at a Pebble Beach. What's the angle in here for you when you're looking through the betting and the type of player suited to the test of a shortish golf course with small, very small greens?
Yeah, I went through the strokes gained numbers and there's nothing massively standing out. Probably just tee to green is wins. I looked at the last 4 years of everyone who finished in the top three, and tee to green had the lowest average. I think it was about 15th for that. But putting was a bit hit and miss. You could get away with it a little bit. You've seen people finishing the top three and way down the putting stats. So it's hard to quantify from a stats point of view. I think you definitely do lean on past course form, which makes plenty of sense. And the other obvious one would be probably Torrey Pines because of those small greens, Poana as well. I did look at the weather forecast as well. It does seem to pick up on the weekend, and Sunday could be quite spicy in terms of the wind, so that's another angle.
And experience here, is that something you put a lot of stock in?
Yes, definitely. I'll probably talk about this more when I come on to one of my picks, but I think the first time I ever saw this on TV, Johnny Miller won it, and that doesn't mean I was watching this in 1974. Listeners, thank you. He actually won it in 1994 when he was semi-retired.
Wow.
And it was just like, what's going on here? It just seemed bizarre that Johnny Miller, who you just think of as a name, even back then, 94, he was just a name from the past that was obviously a great in the 70s. And he won by a shot there. And you're thinking, well, how's that happened? And then you checked his record. And that was the last event he'd won previously, 7 years earlier. He'd also won it before and had lots of top finishes there. Just sort of cemented in my mind. I know Tom Watson then was still playing great golf a lot after that, but Tom Watson was runner-up as well that year. So it certainly put in my mind that vast experience can count for plenty here. And you look down the list of winners and you know someone in their 50s now, like Phil Mickelson, or certainly late 40s, he's got a fantastic record and he's kept it going straight, you know, all through his 30s, 40s. And now, even now, he's right up there. He won it, didn't he, 2 years ago?
Yeah.
Course experience does count for a lot.
And you can get some strange results, can't you, as well? And I think that's because of the lack of length of the golf courses, really, in operation here. You had Ted Potter Jr. 3 years ago staring into the whites of Dustin Johnson's eyes on Sunday and beating him by three shots. That doesn't happen on many golf courses. We had Vaughan Taylor winning here 5 years ago, even Nick Taylor last year winning. You can have some massive shocks. I wouldn't put anyone off throwing a few quid. If you fancy someone at a massive price, Dave, this is kind of the week, isn't it?
Yeah, there's scope to do it. It's just obviously, it seems to be a mix of quite obvious players and a mix of skinners.
Yeah.
But then how do you pick the right skinner? It's not particularly easy, is it? Although even I think Ted Potter was he had a 16th previously. There was some, even in the absolutely bizarre results, that there is some course form.
Yeah, I agree. Ted Potter had a 16th back in, I think, in 2013 it was, before he won the event 3 years ago. So
you'd be doing well to use that as your piece of magnificent evidence that he was going to win.
Yeah, absolutely. I've got two selections for this week, Dave. How about you?
Yeah, it's one of those ones. I could easily be a real sort of stick in the mud and say, I'm going to be all pro about this. I'm not going to have a bet because I don't like the prices. But, you know, people have tuned in, so I'm going to put two up.
Yeah. Do you want me to start off or do you want to go first?
Yeah, you go first, yeah.
I'm going with a player I went for a couple of weeks ago. Henrik Norlander is my number one selection. You've got to, I suppose, kind of recalibrate your thinking with these guys given the lack of field strength. And Norlander is that name I like in the mid-range. In this field, in his last 12 rounds, he ranks fourth in strokes gained total, which puts him right up there with Will Zalatoris and Patrick Cantlay. And his approach play has been really hot, which I think is a necessity when targeting these small greens. He finished 12th at the American Express, then in a tie for second at the Farmers, went okay again at Phoenix last week, finishing 22nd. And he's got that vital experience at Pebble Beach and has improving form figures here as well. He missed the cut in 2013. 70th in 2016, 39th in 2017, and then finished 25th last year. So he's building all the time. And I just don't think we've reached critical mass with Norlander yet. And this looks a good week for him. So I'm going with Henrik Norlander. He doesn't quite fit the mould of that player with bags of experience and some, an elder statesman look to him, Henrik Norlander. But I thought 40-1 was fine in a field of this quality this week.
Yeah. To be honest, my first pick hasn't got that years of course form. In fact, he's never actually played in the event, although he has played the US Open twice here. So Francesco Molinari.
Yeah, I can see this. 25-1.
Yeah, he's obviously seemed to disappear off the face of the earth for a while last year, but then we found out that he'd actually relocated his family to California. So it was worth keeping an eye on what he did in the two recent California events, because you think now he's, you know, would you call it sort of like home advantage now? He's just able to make short trips. And it worked out because he was eighth in the American Express and then 10th at the Farmers Insurance. And if we're using Torrey Pines, the host of the Farmers Insurance, as a kind of bit of a guide, then 10th there is obviously nice. He shot 66 on the tougher South course in the final round. So those small greens, he was able to hit. He ranked third tee to green, which is a stat I said a little bit earlier that I like at the Farmers Insurance. So that was good. So 8th and 10th, his last two starts. And I think Molinari, I remember when he won the Open Championship at Carnoustie, which by the way, obviously is quite a good thing to have on your resume or your CV if that's... if you need to play well in the wind this week.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember at the time I didn't like him for that because I thought, well, he may have all this current form, but can he play an Open? And yet the current form kind of was the dominant factor. So the fact he is in good form again, I think once he is in good nick, he can keep it going. The stats back it up. He's not doing this by smoke and mirrors. He's doing this by classic Molinari tee to green play, which is good. Then Pebble Beach form then. 2010, he missed the cut, but, you know, 11 years ago, you can write that one off. 16th in 2019. 16th doesn't sound incredible, but it's actually his best finish in a US Open, so I think that will give him a little positive boost. So 16th, yeah, on his last visit to this course. And obviously then he didn't have that advantage of being based in California. So that does seem to be working for him, that move. You know, sometimes you've seen players move to the States and it just hasn't worked out, but he's moved there straight away. He's performing well. And I think 25-1 of all the prices at the top end, I thought that was the only one where it seemed to have held up a little bit. So, you know, he won at Bay Hill. He's got a PGA Tour win under his belt on US soil. So, yeah, I think Molinari, if he keeps playing like this, you know, maybe a few more top tens and he would have been second or third favourite this week.
Yeah, I can definitely see it. The only slight negative with Molinari is historically he's not been good on Poana greens, but you're not relying on the putter with Molinari, or you're not thinking he's going to have a fantastic week with the putter, Molinari, and that's why he's going to win. And you can kind of disregard that performance at the Masters, can't you? Because he must have still been thinking about Tigers, the Tiger year at the Masters, I think.
Yeah, I think that was hard on him to go back there, because the week before he'd finished 15th at the Houston Open.
Yeah.
I just think that was a bit of an anomaly, the Masters. But you take out the Masters, his last three regular tour events, 15th, 8th and 10th.
Yeah, I like it. Francesco Molinari, 25-1. I'm going with one of the outsiders as my second pick. Scott Stallings at 80-1 is my second selection. I rate course form quite highly at Pebble, as we've mentioned in this podcast already. Stallings has got tons of it, really. He's a decent bet, I think, at 80s. Finished 14th, 7th and 3rd in three of his last four outings at Pebble Beach in this event. And it was notable, I thought, how he returned to form at the Phoenix Open with a 36th place finish. It might not sound a great deal, but it was a significant upturn in form for Stallings. And it was built on ball striking as well. He gained over four strokes tee to green. And basically, the putter has been absolutely horrific. But there's reason for optimism. And that's because he gets to have a bash on Poana this week. And he's one of the few that sees a significant uptick on these types of greens. In fact, historically, he's gained on Poana in his career, whereas he loses strokes on Bent and Bermuda. And 80s for a player with his course form, who seems to have found something last week in Phoenix, in this field, good price for me, Dave, 80-1, Scott Stallings.
Yeah, definitely agree with you on that one. I'm going to go 100-1 for my second pick and go back to this idea of experience. I'm going to go for Jim Furyk.
Right.
Yeah.
That's left field. That's a bolt from the blue.
Well, it kind of is, isn't it? I mean, you go back through his form down the years. He's got thirds, fourths, fifths, sixth, seventh, all at Pebble. The last really good performance was, well, he was seventh in 2015 and then 14th. In 2019, so he's still competing well here. And the thing that probably got me over the line, he won on the Champions Tour at Pebble Beach back in September. He won the Pure Insurance Championship there, which is an event that's held at a combination of Pebble and Poppy Hills, but I think Pebble's the main one there. So clearly a place where he can go back and keep performing well. Loads of good memories there, Jim Furyk. So he got that win. Since then, he's been runner-up in another Champions Tour event. That was in November at the TimberTech Championship. And then most recently, he played the Sony Open back with the younger players and was, you know, shot four nice rounds in the 60s. And then on his latest start, another Champions Tour event, the Mitsubishi Electric Championship, he was ninth. So, as you'd expect, looking at some of his stats, he was seventh for greens in regulation at the Mitsubishi, which is all very Jim Furyk, fifth in scrambling, putted okay as well. So he just fits the mould of like an older guy who will get the chance to still be able to hold his own on a shorter course. And hopefully he'll know the history of this event, where experience counts for more than just thrashing it a mile.
Well, Jim Furyk, 100-1, Dave's second selection. Should we spin through some of those at the top of the betting, Dave?
Just yes.
Given we've got the one event this week. Patrick Cantlay at 15-2.
Just a price, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really just a price because, I mean, he made that incredible weekend run at the American Express, didn't he? Nearly hunted down Siwoo Kim, and he's got a decent bank of form at Pebble, hasn't he? 11th last year, 9th in 2013. Can see Cantlay going well, but Don't think there's any juice in that price at 15-2.
I thought 10-1 pre DJ withdrawing was iffy, to be honest. So 15-2, I just can't entertain that at all.
What about Daniel Berger, who finished fifth here last year, 10th in 2015, but he was on a lot of people's mind last week, wasn't he, when he missed the cut? Slight disappointment last week, looking to bounce back from that, Berger.
Yeah, again, sort of 14's taking him into the realms of no value. I think had DJ been, I think he was 18s, wasn't he? And even then I was thinking, oh, if he was 20s, I might have a look, but just a little bit cramped, so doesn't really shout for me to back him at 14s.
Yeah, and Casey at 16-1, are you worried about the travel with Casey? Maybe he'll run out of a little bit of steam this week. He's got, a lot of these top players have got good form at Pebble, and Casey's obviously got recent winning form, having won in the desert a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, well, he's gone back and forth, hasn't he? So he did win going the other way, but I don't know. Well, jet lag can get you. I've always found it harder going one way. Have you ever experienced that in your travels?
You know, it's that long since I've been abroad now, Dave. I can't remember, to be honest. I don't think jet lag has really hit me, but then I've not had to play a major golf tournament either I've been travelling.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, it seemed it was something that wasn't a factor when he went from California to Dubai and then won in Dubai. But I don't know, can he keep going back and forth? He'll be all over the place. I don't know. Again, probably it's more so 16-1 for Paul Casey. I know he's won in Europe, but he doesn't win very often in America.
So. Yeah, I think that's skinny 16-1. I much prefer those guys, like you mentioned, Molinari, going Molinari at 25s. I like that. And I think those three guys, Day, Zalatoris and Spieth, are all intriguing for different reasons, aren't they, really? Jason Day at 20-1 has got that incredible bank of course form day. He's missed his last couple of cuts, but the ball striking was good last week in Phoenix. And we know he loves Poana Greens and he loves this venue, doesn't he, Jason?
Yeah.
Day.
Yeah. Again, what was he pre-DJ? Was he 28s or something?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. I need to sort of move on from that because it's happened, but it's sort of hard not to. But Kevin Streelman at 35s, he's another with some great course form.
Yeah, I think he'll go well.
Yeah, I can see him contending. What do you think of Mickelson?
Yeah, it wasn't on my mind, in all honesty, Mickelson, just because of the recent performances. But as you've mentioned, it can just flip here, can't it, when you get to Pebble Beach and having won this event twice in the last decade and finished second on a couple of occasions, third last year, I wouldn't be shocked if I saw Mickelson there on Sunday.
It's like if you just removed his kind of age and you know, his last three starts in this event, third, first and second.
Yeah.
Oh, that's sensational. He's won it five times. I don't know. It's just, it's almost like he's switched to like Champions Tour mode and someone needs to press a button on his back to get him. It's like, I'll fill you in the wrong. You can go and win as often as you like on that one, but it's somehow, I don't know whether he's getting into bad habits and thinking, oh, he can win this sort of with one hand.
Yeah,
but
maybe.
When he comes back to the regular tour, it's not happening, is it, really?
No, 40-1, Phil Mickelson. I think he's been that sort of price for this event. I know it's a lot weaker, the field, but he's been that sort of price in years gone by, hasn't he, when we've had stronger fields, but when he's been in better form and it's not been...
Yeah.
Form-wise, it would be a little bit of a bolt from the blue, wouldn't it, if Mickelson won this week. We've not talked about Jordan Spieth, Dave. He's had a one scrubbed off his odds, hasn't he, given what he did last week?
Yes.
22-1 when he's been going off three figures.
Yeah. I mean, it probably was going to turn. You can't just think he can be that good and then just be gone at the game. But one of the interesting elements is that he kind of wasn't meant to play well last week. It's not, he says it's not a good course. From this one, absolutely is. But it's almost a shame he hasn't played. There wasn't a week in between and he's had another duff finish somewhere. Then you might have seen him revert back to 35s, 40s. But I don't know. Just 22-1, is it is that a bit of a defensive price from the from our odds makers to because they expect a bit of a surge on him?
I'm not sure because what price could you go Spieth this week given his iron play last week? And we know that iron play is always one of the key criteria at Pebble Beach. I don't think you could be any bigger on Jordan Spieth this week.
Well, do you think he might drive it off a cliff here and there?
He could do.
That's not colloquialism. I actually mean drive it off.
I mean, he's scrambling on Thursday and Friday. It's a joy to watch him, isn't it? Because he's got a little bit of Seve about him, hasn't he? He really has, Spieth.
Yeah, and sort of with that is the kind of the thrill of wondering where his T-shirt might go, which was a Seve thing as well.
I love his reaction on the shot on the on 15, where he's still in contention on 15 on Sunday, and he needs to make either birdie or eagle on that par 5. And he hits a rope hook, doesn't he, with the 3-wood, and he's asking for it to sit when everyone knows it's going straight in the middle of the lake, basically.
What if you kind of not willing to get involved here at 22s, what do you think of him for the Masters at 25s? Do you think that's you're a week too late and you wish you'd got on him?
Yeah, I think I'd rather back him here in this field at 22s than 25s for the Masters, wouldn't you? I mean, the Masters is going to have every single big name in the field, and this is a week event.
Yeah, you can't see how he can work himself much further up the betting really between now and the Masters.
No, I think he'd have to win this week, wouldn't he? Basically,
yeah.
I'd much rather have the 22-1 this week than the 25-1. I think that 25-1 at the Masters is very defensive compared to the 22-1 this week.
Yeah. While I'm on that page, I'll just read them out. Dustin Johnson 6-1, Rahm 10s, McIlroy 10s, Koepka's into 11s after his win, DeChambeau 11s, Justin Thomas 11s, Schaffelet 16s, then Spieth 25s with Cantlay and Reed.
Well, it's difficult, isn't it? I personally think Dustin Johnson will go seriously close again at 6-1.
Someone's given me a free bet, that's going straight on DJ, isn't it, really?
Yeah. Quick line on Matt Jones as well here. I thought could go well this week.
And I definitely looked at him. Yeah, he's got quite a few smattering of top tens, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's 50-1 this week. I thought he was worth a quick mention. And I got to end with Will Zalatoris as well, whose tee to green play is just he's just outstanding, isn't he? I think we're just waiting for Zalatoris. I'm sure when he does win, I'll manage to miss him, but it wouldn't be a massive surprise if it's this week for Zalatoris.
Yeah, obviously, I'd like a bit more course form.
Yeah,
But yeah, he just looks the business, doesn't he? So maybe a win soon for him somewhere.
Very good, thank you, Dave. I've enjoyed that.
Yeah, good.
Thank you, everyone that's tuned in and listened. You can follow us both on Twitter at Dave Tindall Golf and at D Kellner. Just recap your selections for Pebble Beach this week, Dave.
Yeah, so I'll go a point each way, Francesco Molinari at 25-1, and half a point each way on Jim Furyk at 100-1.
I will go a point each way, Henrik Norlander at 40-1, and a point each way, Scott Stallings at 80-1. Those are my two bets for Pebble Beach this week. Dave Tindall, thank you for your company.
Yeah, cheers, Dave.
Thank you, everyone that's tuned in and listened. Do check out all the betting at williamhill.com and on the app. Don't forget as well, we are top price guaranteed on the top 10 in the market this week, and we are paying 8 places each way. So this is your best bet for a golf bet this week with William Hill. Thank you, everyone that's tuned in and listened. Myself and Dave will be back next week. Enjoy the golf and check out all the betting at williamhill.com and on the app. And if you're having a bet, the very best of luck.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.